The first thing we're going to do is discuss the credibility of religions generally. How do we know when a religion's claims are credible and when they're not credible? The second stage of our journey will be an investigation of the credibility of Judaism in particular. The third stage will be, once we have broken down the credibility of Judaism, a first attempt to rebuild it. And the final stage, the fourth stage, will be a final attempt to rebuild the credibility of Judaism using a completely different approach. So once again, the credibility of religions generally, the credibility of Judaism attacked, then an initial rebuilding of the credibility of Judaism, and then finally a final rebuilding. When you approach any religion on the planet, you ask them, what have you got? Every religion will present to you some sort of benefit that you'll get if you join their religion. If you become a Christian, you will be saved in the next world. If you become a Buddhist, you will achieve the eighth stage of transic insight. You could become a sort of divinity. If you become a Hindu, you'll gain control over nature. If whatever religion you join, a Muslim, you'll also get certain amazing experiences. If you ask these religions, tell me something. If instead of joining your religion, I joined that religion over there, will I get the benefits of your religion? If I say to a Christian, I'm not going to become a Christian, I'm not accepting Jesus, instead I'm going to become a Buddhist, will I get the benefits of Christianity? Will I be saved in the next world? What will a Christian tell you? No, of course not. You must accept Jesus. And if I tell a Buddhist, I'm not going to become a Buddhist, instead I'm going to become a Muslim, will I achieve the eighth stage of transic insight? He'll say no. Every religion's claims are exclusive. That is, if you join our religion, you get the benefits of our religion. If not, then you don't. And when a religion makes this claim to exclusivity, they step onto a credibility trapdoor. You say to them, tell me something. You're the only one who can tell me how to be saved. You're the only one who can tell me how to get to the eighth stage of transic insight. You're the only one who can tell me how to gain control over nature. That means the technology that you're offering me must not be patently obvious. It must not be written in the heavens. Because if everybody could see it, then everybody would know you have to accept Jesus to be saved. So if it's not patently obvious, if not everybody in the world has realized it, then where did you get this information? When you ask that question, every religion will reveal to you something which I call the revelation narrative. The revelation narrative is the story of how that religion came to possess its secrets. And when I was doing my undergraduate work, I compared revelation narratives and discovered that in 165 major religious families, thousands of sects and cults all across the planet, every single religion without exception has the exact same pattern in their revelation narrative. The pattern's fairly obvious. How does Christianity start? Well, excluding, let's say, the original Jesus cult. With the original Jesus cult, you have Jesus who actually launched this group. But Jesus died, and when Jesus died, so the cult almost evaporated entirely. Christianity, as we know today, was launched by an Orthodox Jew by the name of Shaul, who was walking alone on the road to Damascus, 35 years after Jesus died, when suddenly there appeared in front of him none other than Jesus, nice to meet you. Jesus appears to Paul, Shaul, who changed his name to Paul. He tells all the miracle stories of his life. Shaul is so moved by the revelation, he converts, becomes a Christian, goes back into the city, starts telling people about his experience with Jesus on the road to Damascus, writes down the story of Jesus' life, including all the miracles, then writes more than half of the books of the New Testament. These Pauline fragments are passed down from around 65 CE to around 325 CE, and 325 CE they're gathered at the Council of Nicaea, put together, and the New Testament is born, as is modern Christianity. If Paul told the truth about his experience with Jesus, the whole thing is true. If Paul lied or hallucinated or imagined or exaggerated, then the whole thing is not true. It turns out the credibility of all of Christianity rides on the credibility of one man, Paul. How was Islam founded? So Muhammad heard these voices, I'm quoting their text, heard these voices in his head, which he came to believe were the voices of God. He then dictated these prophecies that he had heard, and each one was written down as an individual surah, and these surahs were gathered together into the Quran. Muhammad himself, a Muslim, will be proud to tell you, was illiterate. He could not read, he could not write, but he had a scribe. And the scribe wrote down each of the stories as he dictated them. If the stories that Muhammad told are true, then Islam is true. And if Muhammad had epilepsy, or imagined, or exaggerated, or whatever the case was, different theories, then it's not true. The credibility of Islam rests entirely on the credibility of one man, Muhammad. The same is true about every religion on the planet, you name it. Siddhartha Gautama, who launched Buddhism, who alone ascended to the eighth stage of transic insight, came to know all there is to be known, descended back into his body while no one was present, and began his 45-year career as a leader and teacher. The Mormons were founded by Joseph Smith Jr., who was hiking alone when he discovered golden tablets written in a language not known to modern man called Reformed Egyptian. Now, thank goodness, buried next to those tablets was a dictionary which translated from Reformed Egyptian to modern English. He translated the tablets, and he destroyed them, because who needs golden tablets anyways? And he brought the translation, which came to be called the Book of Mormon, back to mankind. And then he and his partner, Oliver Cowdery, had regular revelations throughout their lifetime, which they wrote down. That became the Doctrines and Covenants. And the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints was born from these two men's revelation. If they told the truth, the whole thing is true. If they told a lie, the whole thing is a lie. Do you see the pattern? Now, I am not telling you that any of these religions are not true. It's entirely possible one of them or all of them could be true. What I am telling you is that from an academic perspective, the credibility level is zero, because it's always based on the word of one or two people. End of part one. How do we evaluate the credibility of religions generally? Look at the revelation narrative. How did the religion start? If the original story is not credible, then the religion itself and all that follows is also not highly credible. Part two, the credibility of Judaism under attack. Judaism starts like every other religion on the planet. You open up the Torah and it says, God spoke to one man, Abraham. Sure. A generation later, he speaks to, coincidentally, Abraham's son, Isaac. Family business. One generation later, Jacob. Do you see how suspicious this is? Now, of course, if you mention this to an Orthodox Jew, immediately, the Orthodox Jew will object and say, no, you're reading the wrong part of the book. Flip to the second book, the book of Exodus, where there you see a story about how 3 million people escape Egypt, they make it to Mount Sinai, and there God appears and he speaks to 3 million people. Now that is impressive. 3 million people, what are the odds that 3 million people would have all conspired, told a lie about a mass revelation, and no one in that entire generation would have confessed and said, we made it all up? What are the odds? An Orthodox Jew will tell you. And if you try this in a university classroom, they will laugh you out of the room. They will ask the most obvious question on the planet. Tell me something. How do you know that God spoke to 3 million people? Well, it says so in the Torah. Well, who wrote the Torah? According to the latest technology, what they're teaching today in most universities across the planet, the Torah is written by four men, J, E, P, and D, redacted by a woman called R. What happened was the redactor, or some friend of the redactor, passed this book off on some unsuspecting group of cult followers, told them, look, God spoke to all of you, all of your ancestors, God spoke to you, and here's the story, 3 million people heard God speak. The cult leader was incredibly charismatic. The cult followers were wild-eyed and desperate. There was mass hysteria, perhaps some natural phenomenon, and they all bought it. And it's very easy to understand how Judaism could get started. A charismatic cult leader tells people a story about 3 million people hearing God speak, and the mythology is accepted, and the thing is up and running. And at that point, the credibility of Judaism is reduced to absolutely zero. We are just like every other religion on the planet. One person told a story, and that story was bought hook, line, and sinker. And Judaism crashes in fire. Part three, the rebuilding of the credibility of Judaism. Part 3 and Part 4 are completely independent arguments. They have nothing to do with one another. I'm going to try to get both of them in so you can get a sampling of the way that there can be a rational basis for belief in the Sinai event. Both are complex, but not complicated. Complex meaning there are a few moving parts. But if I'm clear enough, then you will walk out with a complete package and you will be able to say over the argument fairly simply. Part 3, here we go. The first rebuilding of Jewish credibility. We must be empiricists. We must link ourselves to the physical realities, to the evidence. We cannot suck theories out of our thumb. This could be true. That's irrelevant to me. What is in fact true? What do we know for sure is true? One thing we know for sure is true. There's a book. And that book tells a story from the second through the fifth chapter, the second through the fifth book of the five books of Moses, tells a story about 3 million people hearing God speak. That means at some point, some charismatic cult leader or group of leaders must have told somebody or written down that this event happened, this mass revelation. When the charismatic cult leader first introduced to the world this event of Sinai, 3 million people hearing God say, I'm the Lord your God, you should know other gods before me, where did the charismatic cult leader place this event in history? In other words, come with me back 1,000, 2,000, 5,000, 50,000 years ago, whenever you want to say Judaism started. Let's go back to the moment where the charismatic cult leader, in this case played by Kellerman, will persuade the wild-eyed charismatic cult followers, yes, that's you, right, that the whole thing is true. How did it happen? So there's only three possibilities, my thesis says. There's the past theory, the present theory, and the future theory. When Judaism was originally launched, it had to have been launched with one of these three lies, and there is no other possibility. What are the three lies? The past, the present, and the future. Start with the simplest. The simplest is the present. And the present lie, a charismatic cult leader comes to you and says to you, you all heard God speak. You heard him say these words. I'm the Lord your God. You should have no other gods before me. Moshe, Moshe, come up to the mountain. I went up on the mountain. I got the Torah. I brought it down, and I'm here to give it to you. I hand you the book, and you are so moved by my charisma that you all cry out in unison, amen. You'll get a chance. Don't worry. And the religion is up and running. This is called present theory. Because which generation do I, the charismatic cult leader who's launching this religion, which generation do I claim heard God speak? In this lie, I claim it was the present generation who heard God speak. You who are standing in front of me today. Possibility number two, past theory. Slightly more complex. In past theory, the charismatic cult leader comes to a group of people and he says to them, you heard nothing, for God never spoke to you. It was long ago at the foot of a great mountain. All of your ancestors were there. There was a great prophet Moses. God descended on the mountain. He said, I'm the Lord your God. You shall have no other gods before me. Moshe, Moshe, come up to the mountain. Moses went up. He received the Torah. He brought it down. He gave it to all of your ancestors. They were there. They became religious Jews. They kept the law carefully for generation after generation. For two or three generations. Then there was a terrible, now insert whatever you want, flood, disease, war, and the entire Jewish nation fumbled the tradition. It was lost. And no one in your family has known anything about Mount Sinai until now, when I, Fred, came back to tell you about the Sinai event, which God told me about last night. And I actually have a copy of the original Torah, which I'm here to give to you. I hand you the book, and you are so blown away by my charisma that you all cry out in unison. You're not going to make it as cult followers, yeah? Amen! Okay. Don't worry, you'll have one last chance. Okay. The reason, obviously, why this is called past theory is in past theory, the charismatic cult leader says to a group of people, God did not speak to the generation that's standing in front of me. He spoke to your ancestors long ago. By the way, one subtle point. Why, when I explain past theory, do I say that God spoke to your ancestors, they carried it for a few generations, but then it was lost? And after Moses, there was a gap where no one knew about Sinai until I, Fred, came to give it back to you. Why must I insert the story of the gap? Why can't I, Fred, say that all of your ancestors received the Torah, it was passed straight down to you, and your parents are all Orthodox Jews? Why can't I tell you that? Because it's not true. I just made this thing up in the other room. The ink's still drying. If I tell you your parents all received the tradition from their parents, my lie is obvious and my credibility drops to zero instantly. No one's going to follow me. Therefore, in order to protect my credibility, I must tell you the tradition was lost, and that's why your mother knows nothing about it. Don't bother asking. Is that clear? Present theory, past theory. There is one other possibility, which is future theory, which I include just for completeness sake. In future theory, the charismatic cult leader comes to a group of people and he says to them, you heard nothing, because God never spoke to you, and God never spoke to your ancestors. But someday, there'll be a great mountain Sinai. Generations from now, there'll be a great prophetic leader, Moses. God will descend on that mountain. He'll tell all of your descendants, I'm the Lord your God. You should have no other gods before me. Moshe, Moshe, come up on the mountain. Moses will go up. He'll get the Torah. He'll bring it down. He'll give it to your descendants. And I happen to have an advanced copy right here. I pull this baby out. I hand it to you, and you're so blown away by my charisma that you all cry out in unison. You're there. Obviously, this is called future theory because here the charismatic cult leader says, which generation heard God speak? It wasn't your ancestors. It wasn't you. It will be in some day a future generation. Now, note the power of the structure that I've created. Every copy of the Torah on the planet says that God spoke to 3 million people. The charismatic cult leader who introduced that to the Jewish nation had to tell those people when the event took place. He either had to say, God spoke in the past to a past generation, he spoke in the present to you, or he will speak in the future to a future generation. Do you see there is no other possibility? Now, the power of this model is, what happens if I would show you that the future theory could never have produced Judaism as we know it today? It would never have worked. Then you and I would know that Judaism was originally launched with the present or the past. But what would happen if I showed you that not only the future theory could never produce Judaism as we know it today, but the present theory also could never have produced Judaism? It wouldn't have worked. Then you and I would know that the lie called Judaism was produced, in fact, by the past theory. That's the genesis of Judaism. That's how it happened. But what happens if I show you that the past theory could never have generated Judaism, that that lie would never have been able to produce what we see today? If the past lie, the present lie, and the future lie could never have worked, that would lead us to a fourth conclusion, which is that Judaism is true. Let's give it a try, very quickly. A small problem with the future lie. I'll show you a small problem with the future lie by showing you a strength of present and past. When you see the strength of present and past, the obvious flaw in future lie will be evident to you. Again, let's be empirically based. Let's be rooted in reality. There are a group of people on the planet today called Orthodox Jews. They believe with all their heart and soul that God spoke to their ancestors at Mount Sinai. I know they exist. I've met them. They're out there. Now, this is not the first generation of Orthodox Jews. I know because I hang out at the Israel Museum and I look at fragments from 500 years ago and 1,000 years ago and 1,500 years ago and 2,000 years ago. And if you will come with me back to Israel, I can show you, concrete in front of you, under glass, that there were Orthodox Jews bouncing around for at least a couple thousand years who believed in this whole mythology. Fact, nobody on the planet argues. There have been at least 2,000 years of this chain of tradition passing through history. The whole debate is, what's at the top of that chain? Is that a charismatic cult leader or someone else? Watch. Present lie, the present theory. If I'm a charismatic cult leader and I persuade all of you that you heard God speak, what do you tell your kids? We heard God speak. What do they tell their kids? My parents heard God speak. What do they tell their kids? My grandparents heard God speak. And they tell their kids, my great-grandparents. And they tell their kids, my ancestors heard God speak. And they will tell their kids, my ancestors heard God speak. And you'll end up with a chain going down through history saying, our ancestors heard God speak. Is that in fact what we have? Yes. which means at the top of this sociological phenomenon of 2,000 years of tradition could be the present lie. The present lie could have generated this. Is that clear? Come over here for a minute. The past lie. If I'm very charismatic, I persuade all of you that your ancestors heard God speak at Mount Sinai, the past lie. And you believe that. What do you tell your kids? Our ancestors heard God speak. And they tell their kids, our ancestors heard God speak. And we'd end up with generation after generation after generation saying, our ancestors heard God speak. Which is exactly the sociological phenomenon we're looking at. Which means the past lie could have generated the reality that we're looking at. The past lie and the present lie work. Is that clear? Come over here for a minute to future lie. Charismatic cult leader persuades a group of people. None of you heard God speak, and none of your ancestors heard God speak. And the reason is five words. God has not yet spoken. If I persuade you that God has not yet spoken, and you believe that with all your heart and soul, someday he'll speak, but God has not yet spoken, what do you tell your kids? God hasn't spoken. And they'll tell their kids, God hasn't spoken. And you'll end up with generation after generation saying, God hasn't spoken. Is that the sociological phenomenon we're looking at? No. That means the future lie is not the story that was told which generated Judaism as we know it today. Now, I admit, someone might at some point in history have told a future lie, but at some point that had to segue into either the present or the past in order to generate the Orthodox Jews that we've seen for the last 2,000 years. Is that clear? The future lie does not work. One down, two to go. Present lie. One of the tools that we use when we study religions today is called Applewhite Theorem. It's named after a charismatic cult leader by the name of Marshall Applewhite. Applewhite led a cult in California. Are you surprised? The cult was actually unusual insofar as he gathered about 40 people who are very wealthy, very successful in their careers, living in a very wealthy community by the name of Rancho Santa Fe. He told them that you don't have to live these lives of quiet desperation. If you want, you can ascend to a better place. You can come to heaven with me if you'll pass through Heaven's Gate, which was the name of the cult. And if you want to pass through Heaven's Gate, it's very simple. You just must be wearing black Nike tennis shoes. And 40 people went out and bought black Nike tennis shoes and started wearing them 24/7. There were several more revelations he had. He asked the men to perform this gruesome surgery on themselves, which I won't go into detail about. Finally, he gathered the entire group at his palace in Rancho Santa Fe, and he told them that tonight we're going to ascend, and if you want to ascend, all you have to do is take this lethal dose of phenobarbital, and after you pop the pills, tie a hefty plastic trash bag over your head and around your neck, and you will ascend. And on video, 38 out of the 40 members, two people were prevented from getting there that night, 38 out of the 40 members, they wanted to be there, but they couldn't get there, 38 out of the 40 members declared on video their faith in Marshall Applewhite, popped the pills, and tied the hefty plastic trash bags around their necks and laid down and died. This whole event took place 20 minutes from the University of California, San Diego, which is one of the two centers for the study of cults in America. They dispatched a team of graduate students that photographed the entire scene, began the research. What they found was there was not a single member of the Heaven's Gate cult that had any psychological or psychiatric background. That is, they hadn't seen a therapist. Which either means that these people represent, in a country where more than 50% of the people see therapists at some point, these people either represent America's psychologically elite, which may not be saying much, or they were so sick they didn't know to go get help. So they asked the family members, tell me, before your relative joined this group, what were they like? And every family said, before my relative joined this group, they were perfectly normal, completely sane. They joined the group, they became a raving lunatic. What have we got? People with bachelor's degrees, master's degrees, PhDs, medical doctors, lawyers, who are highly successful financially, psychologically stable, drop into a cult and lose their minds. Why? Because of Applewhite theorem, which has two clauses. Clause A, people are gullible and will believe anything, even something that asks them to act self-destructively. A fundamental principle about human psychology. We are believers essentially. We are pre-programmed for religion. And therefore, Applewhite says, people are gullible, they'll believe anything, even something that asks them to act self-destructively. Clause B, as long as the lie cannot be checked. What do I mean? People are gullible. They'll believe anything, even somebody that asks them to act self-destructively, as long as the lie cannot be checked. Why did Marshall Applewhite say, the spaceship that dropped your mother off here is coming to pick you up? Why didn't he say that? Because you would call your mother on the phone and say, Mom, remember the spaceship? And she would say, Sonny, you're in a cult. Run! You'd tell your friend sitting next to you, call your mother. In 15 minutes, the cult would be gone. Why didn't Marshall Applewhite say, the spaceship that dropped your grandmother off here is coming to pick us up? Because you'll never get away with such a lie. People are gullible, but they're not that gullible. We will believe uncheckable lies because we're believers essentially. But we will not believe a lie that we can check without checking it first. And therefore, every religion on the planet is launched with a lie that can't be checked. Hi, my name is Paul. I just came back from the road to Damascus where I was alone and I met Jesus. No one else was there. Can you check that? Hi, my name is Muhammad. I just had an prophetic experience. Can you check that? Every single religion on the planet, go see, every religion on the planet begins with a lie that cannot be checked. The problem with present theory is in present theory, the charismatic cult leader comes to you and he says to you, you all just heard God speak. If I would tell you that your mother heard God speak, you could check that. If I would tell you your grandmother heard God speak, you would ask her. But I'm telling you the most checkable lie. You all heard God speak. There is no normal human being on the planet under any circumstances that would believe they just heard God say these words, I am the Lord thy God, you shall have no other gods before me, Moshe, Moshe, come up to the mountain. That's why, although I lecture on university campuses all across the world, I've never in 25 years of giving this lecture, I've never met one PhD at any university who is teaching present lie. They teach other things, but they don't teach present lie because you can't get around Applewhite theorem. I have met one man who had a PhD who did believe in present theory. He was the former head of the Reconstructionist Rabbinical Seminary. I spent 2 summers with the man. The first summer, he gets up in front of a group of college students and he says, I believe in present theory and I'm going to explain to you why I believe it. I said, doctor, how can you possibly believe in present theory? How do you get around Applewhite theorem? People are gullible, but they're not that gullible. If you tell them they heard God speak, they're going to know it's not true. He said, I have a way around it. I said, pray do tell. He explains to this group of 80 college students. Isn't it true, he says, that Abraham went to sacrifice his favorite son, Isaac? I said, yes, so what? He said, would any psychologically normal person want to kill his favorite son? Obviously, Abraham wasn't well. So he said, okay, go on, so what? So he said, isn't it true that at the time of the sacrifice, Isaac was an adult? He was 37 years old. And he cooperated with the sacrifice. He stuck out his neck for his father. He told the crowd, would any psychologically normal person stick out his neck for his father to slice? Obviously, Abraham's developmental disability had a genetic component. It was passed into Isaac. Isaac passed into Jacob. Jacob passed into all the tribes. By the time they got to Egypt, it was an entire nation of retarded people. I said, doctor, about you, I believe this theory. But how do you explain that all the other descendants of the only known retarded nation in history win more Nobel Prizes per capita than anybody else on the planet? Okay, he didn't like my joke. But nonetheless, there is no mainstream academic that teaches present theory because of Applewhite theorem. Small problem with the future lie is the future lie would never produce the sociological phenomena we're looking at. Small problem with present lie is people are gullible, but they're not that gullible. If I tell you something you can check, you will check it. You really have to posit nation of mentally retarded people to get away with that. At every major university in the world today, they're teaching that the Torah is written by man, not by God. And what they teach is past theory. And past theory is really very powerful. A charismatic cult leader made up a whole history. He made up a story that there was once a charismatic leader by the name of Moses. And once upon a time, the Jews arrived at Mount Sinai. And there they all accepted the Torah and the whole thing was up and running. But then it was lost. And for generations, no one knew about it. Until this charismatic cult leader, who actually made up the cult in the first place, quote unquote, relaunched the religion. It's a very powerful theory. And there's one small problem with it. And that's this. I ran an experiment several years ago I went to a great sage in Jerusalem. He passed away now, but his name was Rabbi Shlomo Volba. And I asked him, the Torah that you're teaching all these thousands of people, where did you get it? He said, I got it from my teacher. What was his name? Rabbi Yerucham Levavitz of Mir. I checked. I found four independent literary sources confirming a teacher-student relationship. I got birth dates and death dates. I went back to him. Your teacher's teacher, who was that? Where did Rabbi Yerucham Levavitz get this whole story? And he said he got it from his teacher, Reb Simcha Zissel Zive of Kelim. I checked, four independent sources, birth dates, death dates. Where did Reb Simcha Zissel Zive get it? He got it from Reb Yisrael Salanter of Israel of Salant. Birth dates, death dates, four independent literary sources. And Israel Salanter from Reb Zundel of Salant. And Reb Zundel of Salant from Reb Chaim of Elazhin. Reb Chaim of Elazhin from the Vilna Gaon. And the Vilna Gaon, and I played this game going backwards. It took me 2.5 years to run the experiment. After 2.5 years, I had assembled four independent literary sources for every post-biblical name in the chain. You can find it on the web. It's very famous now. I established a train of tradition that goes from me back to Moses at Mount Sinai. It's 60-some generations. Now, I'm not telling you anything on that sheet is true. I'm telling you something far more powerful. I have all those books on my shelves. And what I'm telling you is, that chain is what Jews believe. That's what they claim. What's the problem? They're claiming that there is a continuous, unbroken chain from today going straight back to Sinai. Why is that problematic? Go back to past theory. In past theory, charismatic cult leader comes to you and says, there was Moses, there was a gap, and there was Fred, MGF. If I persuade all of you, Moses, Gap, Fred, MGF, what do you tell your kids? MGF. What do they tell their kids? MGF. And you have generation after generation talking about Moses, then a gap, and then Fred. And yet, when we start looking at Jewish communities and their histories, we find no record ever of a significant gap in Jewish history. A period where people couldn't ask their parents or their grandparents or their great-grandparents and hear about the word Sinai. It's a continuous line. Where is the gap in Jewish history? And even worse, where's Fred? I spoke at Yale a few weeks ago. When I spoke, I asked a group of students there with degrees, advanced degrees, Jewish studies. I asked them, tell me something. What was the name of the man who went up on the mountain, got the Torah, and brought it down? So a few of them called out, that's easy, Moses. I said, okay, you might earn a PhD. Right now you're up to a BA. Let me ask you a tougher question. When the Jews were abandoned by Moses, Moses died, and the Jews had to go into the land of Israel, who took them in? And a bunch of people confidently said, that was Joshua. I said, I see you know Jewish history. Let me ask you a tougher question. The Jews were in Babylon, and there they were redeemed, and they came back to the land of Israel. Who was the great leader who brought the Jews back to the land of Israel? And a bunch of people cried out, that was Ezra. We all know that was Ezra. Who redacted the Mishnah? Someone cried out, Judah the prince, Yehuda Nasi. Who redacted the Talmud? Ravina and Ravashi. I asked them, how do you know all these names? The answer, these are the most famous people in all of Jewish history. We know of their accomplishments. They're written up in every Jewish book. Then I turned to four biblical critics who were standing on the dais with me, and I asked them, gentlemen, can you please tell me, who is Fred? And one man confidently stood up and he said, Fred is Chizkiyahu. And the fellow standing next to him said, it can't be Chizkiyahu, it's Yirmiyahu. This guy says, it can't be Yirmiyahu, it's Ezra. This guy says, it can't be Ezra. And you just stand back and they kill each other. Now, why are they arguing? Don't they know? And the answer is because in 24 books of the Bible, in 60 volumes of the Talmud, in dozens of volumes of Medrash, there is not a single word about the greatest crisis ever in Jewish history, a crisis where for generations the Jews knew nothing about Sinai. After the Holocaust, everyone who walked out of the Holocaust knew about the word Sinai. They either believed it or they denied it. But everyone knew about Sinai. This is a crisis of such proportions that nobody knew about it. How could that be? And how could that crisis not be recorded in Jewish history? And how could the leader who restarted Judaism be unknown? Small problem with past theory is, where's gap and And where's the gap and where's Fred? End of part three. Past, present, and future could not have launched Judaism. That means Judaism must be true. God must have spoken to the Jews at Mount Sinai. Go to the last part, part four. Very quickly. Every single person in this room believes natural things happen more than once. That's the backbone of scientific theory, and there's a good reason for believing that. Because there's only four natural forces in the world. There's gravity, electromagnetism, the nuclear strong force, and the nuclear weak force. Those four forces never change their strengths. And there's matter and matter and energy never changes. It never goes away. It can be matter, can become energy. Energy can become matter. But it's going to be there forever. That means I can run a scientific experiment, and under the same conditions, I will always get the same result. So if I let go of this pen under these circumstances, it should fall down. Oh, thank God. Okay, now, no matter how many times I repeat that experiment, I'm going to get the same result, unless I put a vacuum above me, in which case, under different circumstances, it might go up with a vacuum. But besides that, it's always going to fall down. Natural things happen more than once. If it is normal and natural to be able to launch a mythology about mass revelation, it should happen again. And yet, in 5,000 years of comprehensive religious histories, we do not have a single nation, a single group of people, 500 people, 250 people, 100 people, who all claim they heard God speak and live to talk about it. There's no such thing in human history. It doesn't exist. So someone will say, you know how it happened? It's very easy. When they left Egypt, how much food could they have carried with them? They carried two pounds of matzah, and even if you calculate in the constipation factor, how long is that going to last? You know, so after a couple weeks, they were starving, and they came into a field filled with mushrooms, and they started eating these things. It was a mass drug trip, yeah? Or it was mass hysteria. They were terrified by a thunderstorm, or it was an evolving mythology that happened over thousands of years. Whatever rational explanation you'll give me, the more probable you make your explanation, the more you say that could easily happen, then the more powerful my question becomes. If it could easily happen, why didn't it ever happen again? Natural things happen more than once. Is it natural for a group of people to make up a story about God coming down in the form of a human being? I know it's possible naturally to get away with that, with that story. How do I know? It happens dozens of times in human history. Is it possible to get away with a story about how God impregnates a woman who gives birth to a miraculous child? Christianity, the Greek mythologies, happens over and over again. People get away with that story. Whatever lie can be told has been told, except for one, which is the most obvious and most basic lie. God spoke to a group of people. Why hasn't everyone ever come up with that again? No one ever thought of it? It's too complicated? God spoke to five people, never thought of that one. What's going on? Why is that? And if you'll tell me, well, it could happen, but it's extremely unlikely, extremely unlikely. It's so unlikely, it doesn't happen more than once every 5 or 6 or 7,000 years. And the horizon of history drops a black cloth at a certain point, and I can't see that far back in history because the cave paintings fade and the papyri rot. And therefore, even though there was a story about mass revelation 6, 7, 8, 10,000 years ago, but I have no way of seeing it because I can't see that far back in history. If you'll tell me that, I'll say to you, yeah, you really believe that? Let me ask you something. I get up in front of you and I take a pair of dice and I tell you I'm the luckiest guy you ever met. I'm going to throw double sixes on the first throw. And I throw a pair of double sixes. So what are the odds I just got lucky? It's 1 in 36. What are the odds the dice are loaded? 35 in 36. Which do you believe? I do better. I pick up the dice. I throw 10 double sixes in a row. The odds of me throwing 10 double sixes in a row are something like 1 in 36 to the 10. That's pretty slim. It's about 1 in 10 to the 15. So now, let's say it's extremely unlikely that someone would get away with a story about mass revelation, and it's extremely unlikely someone would throw 10 double sixes in a row. Let's say that the odds are the same. Or if you don't like that, adjust this number 10 double sixes. Make it 5 double sixes, make it 15 double sixes. I don't really care about the number. Take some number of rolls of dice, of double sixes, that's so unlikely it wouldn't happen more than once every 6,000 years. Whatever number you want, I don't care. Now I show you a video of a man throwing, let's say 10 double sixes in a row. And I tell you, there's a point, 0.000000000001% chance that he just got lucky. And there's a 99.999999999999999% chance those dice are loaded. What do you believe? If you're calm and rational, it's very obvious. Now just switch to the other side of the chart. I show you a picture of a group of people traveling down through history who believed in mass revelation. Which you said, it's so unlikely no one would ever get away with that except for once every 5 or 6,000 years, just like the dice. You know what the chances are this happened naturally? 0.00000000001% chance. And there's a 99.999999999999999999999999% chance this was not a natural event. Put aside all emotional biases and tell me what you think is rational. For me, that presented an awesome intellectual challenge. My hands started to shake when I realized. And it made me realize the challenge of this world is not finding the truth. That's pretty obvious. The challenge is having the courage to live with integrity after you know it. Thank you.